Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
It's the JR Sport Brief Show right here on CBS Sports Radio. On the line right now, we have someone who is a three-time World Series champ. He has a Cy Young Award. He has an ERA title, strikeouts, four-time All-Star, helped the New York Mets win their last World Series title. It's my main man, Dwight Doc Gooden. Dwight, how you feeling, my man?
Everything's good. Thanks for having me, my brother. It's great to be on your show. And looking forward to a nice time, you know, talking with you today.
No doubt about it. You have had an amazing career, especially how you started. But you've also gone through your ups and downs. 2020 has been a wild year for everybody. How has 2020 been for you, Doc?
It started off crazy. But like you said, unfortunately, last year I had a relapse. And I took this time here where normally during baseball season, I'm working, doing games, doing camps, doing clinics, going to my kids' games, my grandkids' games. But with this time, unfortunately, it was a bad thing when you try to turn it to a positive thing where I was only allowed to focus on myself, to get myself back on track, do the things I need to do to maintain longevity. Because in the past, I've had a year clean, you know, a year here and there. But this time, hopefully, just taking a day at a time trying to get it right. So unfortunately, with the coronavirus going on, but it gave me an opportunity to totally focus on myself, you know, reevaluate everything deep inside my soul to get back on track and be there for myself, number one, and then be there for my kids.
Dwight Doc Gooden is on the line with us right here on CBS Sports Radio. Doc, your career, you started off like a firecracker. I mean, back in the 80s, we saw more African-Americans playing, probably north of 20%. Right now, we're closer to 7 or 8. I know your dad was influential in getting you into the game. What attracted him to the game? Why'd he start taking you out to the fields in Florida?
You know what's amazing? My dad is actually from Georgia. Where you at? He's from a small town called Americus, Georgia. He grew up there. He played semi-pro, loved the game of baseball. And the one thing that I regret before he passed away was the final way he got his knowledge from, like you just asked me, because I have four brothers and three sisters. I'm the youngest of all by 13 years. So I'm the only one that was born in Florida. And once I got like about 7, 8 years old, I started playing Little League Baseball. And my nephew, Gary Sheffield, who also played for Atlanta Braves, we grew up in the same house. My sister had him very young. And we used to go to the park and play. And as soon as we started playing, you know, organized baseball, my dad one day asked me, he goes, son, how much you like baseball? I said, I love baseball. He said, okay, well, you know, you got to put in a lot of work. He said, how far you want to go? And I'm 7 years old. So I said, one day I want to play on TV, which I'm sure every kid says that. So he told me, he goes, well, every day I come home from work, we're going to go to the park, and we're going to work on things to make you better. Somehow he knew pitching was going to be my calling and hitting was going to be Gary's calling. So when he would get off work every day, we'd go to the ballpark and we work on different things, but it wasn't fun. And it wasn't fun because as a kid, you want to take your glove, you want to take your ball, your bat, you want to throw the ball, you want to hit the ball. But he said, no, you got to learn the drills and the fundamentals first. So he had me do all these different drills on the pitcher rubber. He had Gary doing all the different batting stances for timing. So we got to the point 2 or 3 weeks later, then he said, okay, now you guys are ready to bring your equipment. So we started doing that. And I think when we first started playing at that age going, it was my father's dream initially for us to make it. Then it became my dream to make it. And a lot of things that he'll teach me, it didn't really stick, or I didn't understand it until I probably got about 13 years old. Then a lot of things that he was telling me about how you set up hitters, read, bat speed, it all kind of came together. Or if I would throw a pitch and I couldn't, and it's not the pitch I wanted or the location, I knew what I did wrong. I knew how to correct it at a very young age. So once I got to the majors at 19, even though you're playing against the best, but for his maturity part and the mechanics that I had, I was already prepared because my dad started teaching me at a very young age.
So let me understand this correctly. Doc Gooden is on the line. You and your nephew, Gary Sheffield, both learned the game of baseball from your pops?
Yes, from my dad. And my dad learned it just from watching it. He used to watch every game. And then in the 60s or 70s, you only had that one game a week on Saturdays. And we got all Atlanta Braves games on the radio because there was no team in Florida at the time. And plus my dad, he coached semi-pro baseball, coached softball. And being a boy, you want to follow your dad every time he hits the door. You're right there in his footsteps. And so I used to follow him everywhere he'd go. And I remember going to all his games, and the guys, when he was young, he used to roll us the ball until we got older, we could play catch. And that's kind of where it started, and just follow my dad around. And his desire started back when he was in Georgia. He had a third-grade education. He had to get out of school to work in the cotton fields. But him and his friends would always go to the field after they got off work, and they'd pick up a game and just start playing. So he never played organized baseball, which is always his goal. So he got to live his dream through me, which was great.
That's wild. We got two major leaguers, one of the best hitters, one of the best pitchers, two of the best of all time. That's ironic. Look, I saw Gary Sheffield on a red carpet years ago, and I actually, my first YouTube video that got me started more than 10 years ago, I was telling Gary to retire, and I told him about that, and he basically forgave me. It was a funny moment. We got Doc Gooden on the line. Look, in 2020, we know that the game is getting ready to get started. Every league basically had to go through a money fight to relaunch sports. In 1994, we know about the strike. This year, we got players complaining. Rob Manfred and the owners complaining about their losses. Are you concerned that baseball is taking too many PR hits and that the game might be lessening in popularity?
That's a great question, and you're right on with that. I remember Ray Snell, the pitcher for the Rays, came out and said he wants his money. He's not going to play unless he gets his money. And even if you feel that way, you can't say that. I mean, there's so many people putting their lives on the line so they can get the opportunity to play. I think a lot of times Major League Baseball forget putting on a Mickley uniform is a privilege. You guys got to be aware of that because – somebody paved the way for you to get to that point. Somebody's making a sacrifice to get to that point. And just like once we, going through this thing in 2020, we're all going through this together. And I think it was, to a degree, it was embarrassing to see Major League Baseball and the owners basically fighting about money. It wasn't so much about how we're going to, prepare the guys, how we're going to get tested. It was about money. And to do that when a lot of people losing jobs, some people not going to get their jobs back, a lot of businesses is cut off, closed down for good. And for those guys to do that, it was bad. On the other hand, I love the game. I'm glad they're giving us something. I'm glad it's getting worked out. I just thought maybe they should have brought an arbitrator in just for this year to work out the differences back because I thought Tony Clark and Mandarin, I thought their personal feelings were getting involved and wasn't doing what's best for the game because it was about those two guys trying to work it out. And I think that was bad. And I think the game is taking a hit, unfortunately, but they still have a chance now to correct that. Kudos to the players that are really going out there to play. I mean, they're risking stuff. They've been away from their family. I know it's a sacrifice, but at the same time, there's so many people in America who would do anything to be in their shoes and want to play and still have the opportunity. So hopefully get it all worked out and they get, the main thing is the health, obviously, and get back to being a great game that it once was.
Dwight Doc Gooden is here with us on CBS Sports Radio. You talk about the privilege to play. We know it's not a right. It doesn't matter how much talent you have. You learned that firsthand. You redeemed yourself. We know you started with the Mets, went to the Yankees, went to the Indians. Who was your biggest influence in getting you back and then staying in the major leagues?
I think my dad played a big part in that. He just basically told me, he goes, son, the baseball game's going to be there, but it starts with you. What are you doing when you don't have practice, when you don't have games, when there's no spring training? What are you doing to prepare yourself not only physically, because you're born with the talent. What are you doing to make the talent better? What are you doing from a mental standpoint to make sure you stay in that point once you get there and you run across those obstacles? So my dad was right there all the time. A gentleman we had, Ray Negron, who works for the Yankees still today, he played a big part of my comeback in 95 when I came back to the Yankees. Because at that time, I still was in denial about the disease of drugs and alcohol. I still wanted to play. I was trying to get to Japan. And he told me, get in shape first, get your life together, and then I'll get to Japan. Once I started feeling good about myself, I got into a program, started getting in shape, getting bike involved with my kids' lives, their school activities, and their little league stuff. I started feeling good about myself, and I said, you know what? I don't want to go to Japan. He said, hey, well, good. I want to send you to Japan anyway. So once I got myself together, it was easy to make the transition, but it all started from the mental standpoint of getting prepared for that. And I always knew I had the ability, but it was just a matter of making the sacrifices that I had to make first. And what I mean by that was taking care of my problems first, because if I didn't put recovery first, I was going to lose everything that I put before that anyway. Once I understood that and accepted that, things got a lot better for me.
Dwight Doc Gooden is on the line with us. Doc, you talk about the mental aspect. Look, Renee Montgomery of the Atlanta Dream, she was on the air with us a few weeks ago. She's not going to be playing in the WNBA's bubble. She said people watch on TV and forget that athletes are human beings. I mean, this week we heard from Odell Beckham Jr. He spoke about the pressures that he faced in 2017 after breaking his ankle, that he was depressed, that he considered walking away from the game. What advice would you have for any athlete dealing with depression or negative thoughts or any type of issues that most people can't understand?
Yeah, it's very tough when you go through that. I went through that myself. A lot of times, especially when your career starts off and you come in with a blast and you reach some high standards, then everything you do, they're going to compare to what you did before. But you got to understand, as a kid, when you're in high school, college, or what have you, minor league levels, your whole goal is to get to the professional level, to play against the best. And once you put in that work to get there, you got to understand that's your goal. Everything that comes after that is basically a bonus. And you can't let anybody take the joy away from you of the game. Unfortunately, injuries are part of that. Unfortunately, the media or the fans might be on you one day. But I think if a player can understand that they're getting on you because of your performance that particular day, they don't know you as an individual. And if you can separate the two, you'll be okay. And I had to learn that as I went along, because it was the players, especially in New York, like Odell got a taste of New York. It's tough. The media is right there. They're very knowledgeable of the game. The fans are right there. They're very knowledgeable. And they fans, unfortunately, believe what they read. But if you can separate the two, that they're getting on the performance, not necessarily you the person. And if you're giving 100%, the fans will appreciate that. And that's all you can give. And you got to understand that you're living a dream. You're living a dream, something that you work for. But again, it's a privilege that so many kids, not only in America, but in the world, would love that opportunity to do. And you're a chosen one to do that. You can't let anybody take that away from you and take that joy away from you. And I say that because I remember in 1986, like 84, I was rookie of the year. 85, I was Cy Young, Triple Crown, AP, Athlete of the Year. I won all that. And so in 86, when I came to the league, I can pitch a shutout, and they might say, yeah, that's great, but you only had 3 strikeouts. And I'm like, wow. So everything was compared to that. And I did allow that little bit to take the joy away from me. I allowed the media to do it. And then myself, my expectations, I wasn't reaching it. I was trying to get 10 strikeouts. So I was trying to pitch out. It was too much because I had reached a bar where it probably never happened again, especially for me at that time. Normally, that would happen in your 5th, 6th year in your career. Mine just so happened in my 2nd year of my career. And once I understood that, when I came into the league, when I was on the field working with Gary and my dad, I just thought about playing the major leagues, having a long career, staying healthy. I never thought about awards, whatever it was. I got to do that. I got to win just about every award a pitcher won. Who am I to say that's not enough, or doubt myself, or cheat myself out of the great things that I've achieved? So once I was able to understand that, accept that, the game became fun again, and I was able to enjoy that. So to players or young athletes in any sport that's going through that, I would just say to them, understand how you got there. And if you're having those mental problems, have someone you can talk to that you trust, that's not going to judge you on how you're feeling. And don't be afraid to share your true feelings, because like you said, athletes, we are human. Unfortunately, our families and our career puts us on a pedestal, but we're no different than anybody else. We just have different jobs.
I like the way you put that. A lot of people only look at the cash. We're chatting it up with Dwight Doc Gooden. We see the NFL money that a lot of players are getting, and that's getting thrown around. Pat Mahomes and his new contract. Did you ever meet the younger Pat Mahomes during your time in the big leagues with his dad?
I never met him. I met his dad several times. I played against his dad when I was with the Yankees. His dad was with the Mets, actually. But this past winter in January, I was playing with his dad. We have a fantasy camp that we do every year with the Mets in Port St. Lucie. So we got to play together and talk a little bit. Great guy. I'm very happy for him. And to see what Pat's doing, I think that's going to be a great incentive for the young kids that's going, whether it's football or what sports is, that they do have an opportunity and someone of our color seeing what they're doing. And it's still there, but you just got to put in the work to do that. He's earned everything he's getting. And his dad was great. I mean, his dad was a great player, and we talked about that. We said, man, we played our whole career. What this guy's going to make in 1 year, it's more than we made our whole career. But the game's changed so much, you know, and that's just where it is right now. But he's a good kid from what I hear.
Yeah, Pat Mahomes, he's going to make upwards of $503 million. You talk about him being a solid human being, but then still playing at a high level. His dad was influential. You say your dad was influential. Do you feel that you were prepared for the big leagues? I mean, when you have all the programs, it doesn't matter, NFL, MLB, NBA, especially rookie introductory programs. Do you feel when you came into Major League Baseball that you got the support from the league and your organization?
I would say no, and I don't blame the league. It just where the game was at that time, and I think through maybe my downfalls and other players' downfalls, the leagues learn to take these young guys when they come into the league to try to prepare them, because when you're 19 years old and you're going to New York and someone's expecting you, you're going to run across all types of people. I was prepared on the baseball field, but for living a life, learning to say no, learning about trusting people, I wasn't prepared for all those things that come your way. All the different women approach you, I wasn't prepared for none of that stuff. Only prepared with the baseball player. And then you're living your dream as a player, but then you're trying to live your life as a person and things that you're not prepared for. Even having the amount of money you have. I remember times knowing that I just had a credit card, just taking all my friends, we're going to the mall, we just spending like, I'm going to always make this money. Totally out of control and not listening to my parents, not listening to my agents. Like, and then sometimes your family puts you on this pedestal because they're getting everything they want, you know. And so if they see things going wrong, they're not going to tell you because you're the breadwinner. Only my mom would come to me and say, hey, son, slow down. Slow down. You know, you're moving too fast. You're hanging out too much. Or I don't like certain people that you're hanging with. Or I don't trust this guy. She would do that. She didn't care about financial. But not all my family. I think they had my best interest. But when you're the guy taking care of everybody, a lot of times you're not told or they're not telling you what you need to hear. They're telling you what you want to hear. And then for Major League Baseball and the team, at my time in the early 80s, I don't think they was prepared for that. I think later on, like now, each team have a psychiatrist. They have like a real estate lady. So if they know you're going to make the team, they have to find a place. I remember when I came up, it was like, you make the team. Okay, doc, we'll see you tomorrow. And it was like, okay, where did I go? Where am I going to stay tonight? Luckily, a couple of older guys on the team, so you can stay with me. We'll help you find a place. Now, when guys are in training and they know they're going to make the team, they get them situated before they get there. And they have someone you can talk to. So it's totally different now. But I just think it was a different era. I don't blame the team or the organizations about, you know, what happened with me back then. It was just something that they had to go through.
Doc, hold on a second. We're going to take a pause. But when we come back, I have some more questions for you. Don't you move. It's the JR Sport Brief Show. Doc, appreciate you holding on throughout the break. We have Doc Gooden on the line here with us on CBS Sports Radio. You know, I've had conversations with some of your contemporaries, guys like Tom Glavin, Chipper Jones. A lot of people don't like the way the game is played on the field. It gets me too sometimes. People have heard me talk about it. It seems like it's all or nothing. Home run or strikeout. We don't see or have a lot of the smaller intricacies of the game. Less amounts of bunts or no bunts. No stolen bases. It's like a video game right now. What are your thoughts about the game on the field?
You're right. I totally agree from top to bottom. I think some of the changes are okay, like the replays they do now for his foul balls or the guy making a catch, I think it's good. But a lot of this other stuff, replays, calls the first base, replays on the stolen bases where you call a timeout, I'll probably check. I don't agree with that. And like you mentioned, now there's so many pitchers, they're throwing harder, they're bigger and stronger, they're throwing harder for his velocity, but these guys' mechanics are off. You're seeing way more injuries, more Tommy John surgeries, because nobody's teaching these guys about mechanics. They're just looking at velocity. Like a guy like Tom Glavin or Greg Maddux, they come up in this era, they probably wouldn't get looked at because these guys only threw, you know, 85, 86. They're looking for the guys that's throwing 97, 98, but they're not teaching them how to pitch. And the hitters, like you said, they understand what they call a launch angle. They're not looking to bunt guys over, no more hitting runs, no more stolen bases. They're just going for the home run. So the pitches they're taught, strike guys out, hitters you're taught to hit home runs. So you're not teaching the little stuff, the fundamentals of the games. I don't necessarily blame the players. I blame the organizations because that's where everything is going. They're teaching this stuff at the lower levels in the minor leagues. And it really shows when it gets to the postseason where you need to get a guy over to second base, bunt the guy over, do different things. You don't see that. Unfortunately now, like I love the National League game because it's more strategy with the double switches, you know, bunt guys over, you know, different like that. Now this year, I understand what you're going to have the DH. But I guarantee you moving forward, you're going to start seeing the DH. It's going to be a regular thing now in the National League as well because – and it's sad to see where pitchers are getting hurt, running bases, trying to bunt, they can't do it. Where it being a former pitcher is weird because little league in high school, the pitcher was the best athlete on the field the majority of the time. Now you get to the big leagues and you can't bunt because it's things they don't work on. Now everything, like you said, is about hitting the home run, about striking guys out. That part of the game I don't like. I don't like the fraternizing before games where you see guys talking to other teams before games. You know, everybody's hugging, everybody's hanging out, doing stuff like that. We didn't do none of that stuff. I mean, I might be a little old school with baseball, but I think for the fans, it sends a bad message. When you see opposing teams talking to each other before games, everybody's hugging, everybody's hanging out. It's not a good look. And the other thing I would do is a lot of the times the new stadiums, they have the velocity on the scoreboard. They say it's for the fans. I get that. But when you have young pitchers, I remember in 2015 with the Mets, when they had Harvey, they had DeGrom, they had Syndergaard, these young guys, after every pitch, they're looking at the scoreboard to see how hard they were throwing. And so I would be more concerned with that for my pitchers. I get it for the fans, but I want them to learn how to pitch, read bat speed, see what pitches are working, work on your mechanics, but nobody's teaching that. So the pitch is throwing harder, but you're having more injuries because they're not teaching mechanics. And for the hitters, everything's about the home run. They don't care about batting average and all that stuff anymore. Pitch counts is another thing. Guys throw 100 pitches, they take you out of the game. I don't agree with that because throwing 100 pitches in 3 innings is totally different than throwing 100 pitches in 7 innings. So a lot of those things is just taking too much away from the game.
Well, Doc, let me talk to you about this. You brought up the New York Mets. That's the team that you came up with. You made your mark. We see the issues they've had with pitchers over the years. I mean, even this week, DeGrom has a back issue. Syndergaard, we know he's out with surgery. What do you think about their outlook on pitching and how the front office of the Mets operates from everything that you gather?
I love the Wilpons. I love the Wilpons as people. I just like to see them bring more of the – not necessarily 86 guys, but more of former players in spring training. Great guys, great organization. But I think, and nothing against the pitching coach they've had, they have great pitching coaches. But if you have more stuff to offer your team, why not bring in all you can get? I mean, like you take the Yankees. When I first went to spring training, Yankees in 96, you see DiMaggio, you see Yogi Berra, Reggie Jackson, Goose Gossage, Ron Guidry, on and on and on. And so you could pick those guys' brains. And it was great for the fans also. The Mets don't do that. You know, they bring John Franco in for a week, which is great. Mike Piazza in for a week, which is great. But there's nobody really coming in from 86 to work with these guys, and I don't understand that part. If I had anything to say, that's something I would change. Not that anybody's trying to take anybody's position, but it's all we're there for the same thing. I'm a Met at heart. I'm always going to be a Met. And it just, you know, hurts me to see that there's more ways to help this team out, to help these guys, and they're not doing it. They're not taking advantage of stuff that they have in-house. It's nothing against the Wilpons as people. They're great people. I just think it could be more they could do to help the team that they have now.
Talking it up with Dwight Doc Gooden, you know, we may have that possibility, obviously, with a future ownership change. That's a real possibility that exists for a lot of Met fans. So, Doc, that might actually happen sooner than later.
Yeah, I see that's happening. It'll be kind of bittersweet. You know, I would hate to see the Wilpons go because that's all I've known. There's their part of ownership when I came in, when I got drafted in 82. But at the same time, it may be time to get some new in there that somebody you have that can compete with other teams when the top free agents are out there, at least have opportunity to bring these guys in to play a fair game, and especially when you're competing against the Yankees and being in New York. You got to be able to spend money, and that's just the way it is now. So hopefully it works out for both parties. Like I say, I'll hate to see the Wilpons go, but it's going to be the best for the organization and best for everybody else. Maybe it's time for a change.
Let's see what happens with the New York Mets. You nailed it. We know all about the Yankees, and we know Mr. Steinbrenner. He's no longer here, but the Yankees, they still spend. What's your favorite memory of George Steinbrenner?
Oh, man, I have so many, but the one, my favorite one is probably off the field. When I joined the Yankees in 96, Mr. Steinbrenner, he had to meet my dad. My dad was there when we were signing the contract and doing negotiations. And then I remember after the no-hitter, after that season, my dad got very sick. He was on Dallas for 15 years, and then he had to have open-heart surgery. And it happened, actually, he had the surgery the day after my no-hitter. And I remember that all season going into the hospital every day, and Mr. Steinbrenner actually was in New York. He flew down to Tampa to the spring training complex. They had a meeting set up, and he saw the gentleman, Ray DeGrom, before he went into the meeting, and he said, "Ray, how's Doc's dad?" He said, "Well, he's not doing good. Doc's at the hospital with him now. They're not expecting him to be around, you know, too much longer." And George said to Ray, "Go in there, tell those guys I'll be back in an hour for the meeting. I'll be back." And he never went in to see the guys for the meeting. He came to the hospital and spent about 2 hours with myself and my dad. in the room. And something like that, you never forget. I mean, here's a guy with so much, you know, pending, coming in for a meeting, never goes into the meeting, but he comes to the hospital first to see my dad and spend time for, you know, with us for a couple hours. To me, that speaks volumes of just the guy that George was. A lot of things he did, not only for my family, but other people through our community. He didn't want any cameras. He did a lot of stuff from his heart. And that's just the type of guy he was.
That's amazing. Doc Gooden is on with us. You talk about the influence your dad had on you and your career, the influence your mom had on you. When we're living here in 2020, there are a lot of talented folks like Doc Gooden who don't get that opportunity, who don't get that next chance. They're just another black person, another minority looking for hope. We just heard from Jimmy Butler this week. He wants the back of his jersey blank because he understands if he wasn't an NBA player, he'd be voiceless like many others. In 2020, what are your thoughts on the social justice movement, racism? I mean, even your nephew, Gary Sheffield, he just shared commentary on both of you guys being profiled and abused on the side of the road in Florida.
Yes, I was with him. And you're right. In our hometown in Tampa, the situation where 86 out the road series, the cops down there, they still harass us a lot because we have fancy cars and we still stayed in like the inner city. And most of my friends was from the projects or inner city. And being 19, 20, when the season's over, I'm still going to hang with these guys. They're still my friends. And a lot of times the cops harass us, they pull us over. I can see one or two times, but after that, they know our license. They know who we are. They would do that. And then one time we got into a big scuffle with the cops where I was brutally beat up. I could have been killed. I played like I was out. And the sad part about it, they took us from the incident where it happened a couple blocks of the way, and then on the way to the hospital, they put two black officers in the paramedics. So when we got to the hospital, it made it seem like it was two officers there. They wasn't. We ended up going to court. We sued them for $3 million. And still today, in Tampa, Gary's harassed still. I'm still harassed the same way. Take a step further, 2008, my mom was picking up my grandson, and the cops pulled out the car. They said her car, she had a white Escalade, fits the description of a car that just robbed the bank. I mean, even if that's true, once you pull a lady over, you see an old lady in the car and you pull out. My mom started having heart problems. Unfortunately, she had a heart attack 3 years ago and lost her life. I'm sure it has something to do with that. And it's sad to see that happened. And you're right. Even if they know who you are or don't know who you are, you don't know. But with that said, you still have some good cops out there. I do believe that. There's some good cops out there. Unfortunately, you have good and bad in everything we do. Even baseball players, my locker room, we had guys that was prejudiced, but that's just the way it is. You just try to do what you can to separate the two and clean it up. And what Butler was saying, I totally agree with him. That's why I always say when I meet people, I say, look, I'm no different than you. We just have different jobs. Unfortunately, everything I do is in the newspaper, whether it's good or bad. And to me, the real heroes, like the ones who are putting it on the front line now, putting their lives on the line, you know, saving lives. And some cops, too, they go out there every day and they fight. I'm sorry. They're fighting for us. I mean, just imagine how bad it would be if we didn't have any officers. At the same time, I don't agree with a lot of stuff that's going on. I think all that stuff has to be cleaned up. And I think we're on the right track to clean that up. And hopefully we're just still on that same path and stay together. And I hate to see when a lot of times now our own, and what I mean by our own black people are arguing and fighting amongst ourselves on trying to get it right. And it's all about opinion. Everybody's still trying to learn and be educated on all this stuff. But we all, black and white, I think we're all in this together. And looking for some answers and trying to get this thing right.
Yeah, we're chatting it up with Dwight Doc Gooden. You know, it's unfortunate to hear about your mom being harassed and having a heart attack. You know, I tell folks all the time, being a fan, speaking personally, I'm a fan. I'm a broadcaster. I have friends who are athletes. I tell listeners all the time, athletes are human beings. They're not all that different. They might make big dollars, but when they step outside, unless you're a huge celebrity, you know, they still have families. They still have the same issues. A lot of times, cash and money can expose and increase those problems. What would you say to someone, fan or broadcaster, who feels that there isn't racism in the world and that everyone is on an even scale? What would you say to them?
I would say that's not true. Until you walk in somebody's shoes, you can't say that. I mean, you don't know what somebody's been through, or sit down and have a conversation with someone and just hear them out. You don't have to agree with them, but hear them out, where they're coming from. And maybe you get a better understanding, because whether it's right or wrong, you're not in the same shoes. You're judged differently because, again, with an athlete, everything you do is scrutinized. It's magnified there. There's headlines, good or bad. Where if it's somebody, and I'm not discriminating anybody, but if somebody working at a grocery store, they have a bad day, that's between them and the manager. Athletes have a bad day. you know, it's headlines. It's on all the sports talk shows. It's all over, and it's going to go on for weeks, unfortunately. So it's not the same. And again, sometimes athletes get breaks and a lot of make be able to cut the line or get different breaks from cops or whatever because of athletes. So it goes both ways. But majority of the time, from my own experience, what I've experienced, you're getting the benefit of the doubt where you'll get the short end where you're judged because of who you are. And they already prejudge you that they think you're better than what you are. You think you're different than everybody else because you're an athlete. And that's not true. That's not necessarily true. Like I said, we're human just like the next guy. And me personally, I love people. I'm a people person. And I hang out with, you know, it doesn't matter if you're the president or you're homeless. I'm going to treat you the same. That's just me. That's just the way I am. But a lot of times you get prejudged just because of the job you have or the position that you're in.
Doc Gooden is on the line with us. The career and life that you've had, man, you've had plenty of experiences. I love how you break it down. It doesn't matter if you're the president or someone less fortunate, you're treating everybody as equals. You've been shaped by your family and every one of your experiences. When you think about the sports world, especially here in the U.S., we see the popularity of football, the NBA growing globally. How can we get more African-Americans playing the sport? Or do you believe that baseball has peaked in our communities?
I think now, just my opinion, like, and from what I see, you see a lot of black athletes, like, say, I'll speak on baseball. A lot of guys from inner city, they give money back. They send, you know, equipment. I think it's better, like me and Gary, or the Little League part we play at Phoenix Projects, inner city, Belmont Heights Little League, if you Google that, you probably know it. Been to many Little League World Series. It's a great program. Had great coaches coming up. Those kids want to see you. They want to feel you. They want to talk to you. They want to touch you. They want to ask you questions. And I think, and I'm speaking to all of like black athletes in any sport, I think going back, and a lot of them do that, but a lot of us don't do that. I mean, Gary, like myself, Gary been doing it. I just got back into doing it. You donate, but they want to see you. And I think when you're there spending time with them, it's up to us to teach them the game, tell them what a beautiful game it is, and so many benefits can come from the game, even if it just gets you a scholarship. That's an opportunity to get you, you know, in a good situation to become great in corporate America. You don't necessarily make it in sports. But to be there, we have to put the time in. When you donate money, that's one thing, but you have to take out time to be there, to take time with these kids, talk to them, and be straight with them. Tell them, this is what it takes. This is the mistakes I made. This is what, you know, I would recommend you do. And I think that's the only way we can get them back, and especially baseball. And it's a shame to see when the percentage is down. And even you go by the Little League parks, they're empty now. Everybody's, you know, on the court. Even my own kids. I have four boys, and my youngest son is 15. He said baseball is boring. He says it's easier to pick up a basketball. You go to the court. You got somebody to shoot with. Baseball, you need, you know, four or five guys. When I was a kid, we could take two or three guys and go to the field and make up a game and play. And now all these fields are empty. But, and I think that's the big reason is because we're not going back there ourselves and talking baseball, spending time with these guys, having camps. Just pop up at one of the Little League games. Spend time with kids. And I think that's what's missing. It's easy to point the finger at Major League Baseball and say they're not doing their job, they're not performing the game. But I think it's us as individuals to go back to the fields we play at and give back to them that way. That's just my opinion.
Dwight Doc Gooden, you talk about being back in the community. What is a normal day? I mean, look, here in 2020, I don't know what a normal day is. But what have you been up to prior to COVID-19? And what are you going to be doing over the next several months and then years as hopefully we get things back to normal?
Yeah, I do a lot of stuff at Hackensack Hospital with the cancer patients. I go there, talk to those kids, try to give them some type of motivation or something that uplift their spirits where if they do well or get healthy and able to make it out, we can go to a game of their choice, whether it's Yankees or Mets, and spend time with their parents because just to kind of distract them from what they're going through, spend all day at the hospitals as well. I just kind of do that. I love, you know, being involved with Little League parks, Little League schools, talking to schools, just sharing my experiences, good and bad. Spend a lot of time now with my kids and grandkids because when my older kids was younger, it was because of my addiction or I was playing sports. I missed a lot of these school activities. That's a lot of this stuff they was doing. So now I get the opportunity to do that with my grandkids. And then my young son, who's 15, he's football and baseball. He's a good counselor down there in Maryland. So I'm down there a lot. I have a 10-year-old daughter who's playing basketball and softball. So I get the opportunity to be a father, to be there for them, and also get involved in the community. Last night I was at the Last Dance for New Jersey baseball tournament throwing the first pitch and talking to those kids. And just something I enjoy doing. My true passion is spending time with kids and just talking to them, you know, and just being straight with them.
Well, Doc, it's been a pleasure having you on. One final request before we wrap things up. You've had an amazing career. We're talking a World Series multiple times, a Cy Young, Rookie of the Year. You've gone through ups, downs. This is a down. 2020 is a down for a lot of folks. What message would you give to any listener who's on that down wave right now?
That's great. I think the thing is a lot of times, and what worked for me is when I'm feeling down and I'm going through it, reach out to help someone else. Try to help somebody else get through something, and that will get attention off of you, and that'll make you feel better. And understand, as long as we're still breathing, we have opportunity to make a difference. And I learned this when I was very young. My dad told me, what good is having a life if you don't have an impact on another's life? And I think if we can get out of the mindset of, oh, pity me or poor me or look what I'm going through, help somebody else, it will help us. And as long as you don't give up, your blessing will come. Trust me, I've been through it all. It will come. And you're not in this alone. We're all in this together, and we're all just one. At the end of the day, we're all just one.
Hey, Doc, I appreciate you taking the time. I know you get plenty of requests. We love you here at the JR Sport Brief, and thank you for taking the time.
Oh, my pleasure, JR. Thanks for having me, buddy. You keep up the good work, and I look forward to talking to you. And like I say, next year, everything goes well at All-Star Games in Atlanta, so looking forward to seeing you, buddy, if not before.
No doubt about it. You've been listening to the JR Sport Brief Show. Big shout-outs and much love to Doc Gooden right here on CBS Sports Radio.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic and conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.